Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Inside podcast number 196. We're recording this on Friday, the 16th of December, 2011. Ewan Spence is unavoidably detained somewhere else, but we do have Mr. David Gilson.
Hello, everybody.
And we have Mr. Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
And we're in the big wind down to Christmas, I guess. We've got about another week or so to go. There's probably been at least one more podcast before Christmas, Rafe, weren't there?
I don't know, because this one's going to be going out on the Monday, and so the following Monday, I think, is Boxing Day, isn't it? So we may have a bit of a gap there, but we will have one probably before the end of the year, where we'll probably be doing our annual roundup of things that have gone on in the Symbian world, and I guess this year there's rather a lot to talk about.
Yes, indeed. Well, I guess that also means we need to wish everyone happy Christmas right on this very podcast, but maybe we'll save that for the end of the show rather than have them clearing off already. A few items of news. It's been a fairly quiet week in the Symbian world. Nokia Pulse has got a big update, and I say quite a big update. I did the change log over on the news story. Various fixes to the keyboard. It's now compatible with the latest Qt components. Fewer Nokia account login prompts, which were getting quite annoying. I have to say this, Rafe, this is all part of the new Map suite, and Nokia Pulse was kind of the core ingredient in that. It's a social network between you and your friends and family so that you can each see where each other are. I thought we'd had this years ago on Google Latitude and various other systems. Isn't this Nokia coming along rather a year or two too late?
It does feel a bit like that to me. I mean, I think it's been nicely implemented. I do like some of the ideas underlying, you know, putting location first in the same way that something like Foursquare does, but also basing it around the fact that you're updating family and friends in very specific circles. So it's, you know, drawing on a lot of the other social networks, you know, be it Foursquare for location, Facebook, Twitter for status updates, and to a certain extent the idea of Google Plus circles and that kind of thing. And, you know, for, you know, just in a purely technical sense, it's one of the most elegant implementations, I think, for, you know, real world, so the average user, they want to keep track of family and friends, particularly in the family environment. I think it could be quite useful. But I think the problem is with this, you've only got so much room for so many social networks, and it's hard to see how this one will gain traction. And what I'd, you know, expect to happen is some of the other social networks, and I think probably primarily Facebook, get a better handle on how to deal with this sharing within a family and bringing location in more, because I think most people would be willing to share a lot more with family and then maybe less with friends and so on. And Facebook hasn't done that very elegantly yet. I mean, Google Plus has maybe done a better approach, and neither of them match Foursquare for the sort of the location stuff. So yes, you know, however elegantly I think it's been implemented, and I will say I do like the idea of it being part of Map Suite, but I think rather than perhaps trying to do it themselves, maybe they could have gone into Facebook. But I guess there isn't quite the granularity of control in the APIs that really allow that. So I suspect Nokia are kind of trying something out and experimenting here, probably in the full knowledge that it's unlikely to take off and get to, you know, the 500 million plus users of things like Twitter and, of course, Facebook as well.
I think Pulse could actually take off once it becomes part of the mainstream Nokia Maps and once it's into firmwares. I mean, but the moment it needs people to actually be geeky enough to download it as a beta component from Beta Labs, which automatically means you're down to a few thousand or a few 10,000 people worldwide, none of whom probably are in the same family and friend groups. The moment you actually get to the point where you've got a Nokia smartphone, a Symbian smartphone, and maybe your wife has as well, and it's both part of this Nokia Pulse functionality is part of Maps on both of your phones, then it becomes useful. But with the very fact that it's limited to just beta and it's not in official shipping software does mean at the moment it's very limited for that very reason.
That's right. And I also think even when it is sort of the default in the devices, that doesn't necessarily mean it takes off, because people won't always use functionality that's there. And that's one barrier. And then you have the barrier that you have to have someone else in the family with an up-to-date version of Maps and up-to-date phone. So I suspect there may be one too many barriers. As I said, I mean, I do like the idea of Pulse, and I particularly like the way that, you know, it is web plus Symbian plus Windows Phone, and so Nokia taking a kind of a broad approach to this. But I do get the feeling that it's maybe the Maps team sort of experimenting with things, how things are going to work. That said, it's entirely possible that, you know, down the road we'll see this sort of a descendant of this in the platforms itself, at which point, you know, then maybe has the possibility of becoming more viable, especially if it can tie in with other services. So, you know, the whole point about Beta Labs and this kind of experiment is they are pushing the boundaries, and Nokia, let's not forget, do own Navtech, and so they do have an enormous location asset that no one else has. So if you're going to think of anyone who's capable of pushing a new service like this, in looking in the longer term rather than in kind of startup mode where people traditionally see these things growing out of, I think Nokia has potential here at least.
Yeah, I had to chuckle though. I mean, we've been saying over the last year or two, as Nokia Maps have grown and grown and grown, they've added modules and added weather and news and restaurants and hotels, and now social networking and travel and network route planning, everything else under the sun. We've been saying, come on, it's getting too complicated. This is, we'll take it back to its roots. And I was then seeing that on Windows Phone, for example, they've got Nokia Drive, which, and on the N9, of course, under running Migo, they've got Nokia Drive, which is just the drive-optimized, car-optimized navigation component, and all of the other stuff is in Maps. So they've taken this very much focused view, and I think that really pays dividends.
I agree, and talking to some of the Nokia reps about this, it's a very deliberate choice to kind of simplify it down to the things you use, and it's the move away from having everything in a single application and rather having it more almost task or experience based, as they kind of refer to it as. I mean, partly I think in the N9 and Windows Phone, it's because it's the first version and there's actually quite a bit of missing functionality. For example, in the Windows Phone version, there's no live traffic, for example, and you actually have to be online in order to do the routing. So I suspect that will develop over time, but it will be this more modular functional, which you're kind of seeing in the suite now. On the Symbian devices as well, the fact it's made up of lots of different applications. I know some people aren't a fan of that, but personally, that does seem to me to be the way to go.
Yeah, the moment I've got this Maps folder on my N8 with 10 different icons in the Maps folder. Well, then again, a year or so ago, I had a Maps icon, and when you tapped on it, the actual Maps application opened up with about 10 icons as its internal menu. So I guess it swings in roundabouts. Either way, you've got to think about what you want to do next once you go into the Maps area.
Yes, that's right, Steve. And I think probably worth mentioning while we're talking around Map and the updates is there's also an update to Live View. This is kind of the augmented reality view. You hold up your phone and see the camera, and then various icons are overlaid on it. It's actually getting better and better in terms of performance, which I think is probably the key to making this work properly. I mean, you still, I think, feel like a bit of a muppet holding this up in the city and waving it around, but I do think it has its potential uses, and I have actually used it in the real world, you know, live, to sort of locate where exactly something was on the street. So although I was quite sceptical about this augmented reality technology initially, I think it has its uses. I will continue to say I think it makes most sense perhaps in something like driving mode, where you can sort of have photorealistic streets going by, particularly when you're doing urban driving. But nonetheless, it does have its uses in the kind of the pedestrian mode, which is, of course, where Live View is really focused at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to Obi Context website has been discontinued. This is an announcement by Conversations by Nokia. I have to say, this is the system whereby about 2 or 3 years ago, when the Obi brand was launched, the big Obi website, they had Obi Calendar and Obi Contacts both syncing down to your phone. And the idea was that, as with, you know, Gmail and Gmail Contacts and other web-based systems, you can access your contacts on your desktop on an internet screen from anywhere in the world, and that would be neatly synced to your phone. It was all a wonderful idea. I don't think it really ever achieved mass traction, Rafe. I don't know that many people. I mean, I never used, I synced to Obi a few times and had a few duplications of contacts and never used it again. But having said that, I still don't know many people who actually use the Obi contacts on the web. So maybe no one will miss this.
I don't know. It's always tricky to know what the use numbers are. I suspect you're right. It's not spectacular. I know a lot of people do use it as kind of a backup service, and that actually will continue. You just won't be able to do the kind of the editing on the web, which, as you say, I think probably was less used. I mean, people who do that kind of thing have probably already moved over to something like Gmail or yeah, Hotmail, or using an Exchange server of some kind. So I don't think many people will miss it. However, saying that, you know, they did the same thing to Obi Calendar a while back, and there was a bit of outcry about that. And I can remember getting quite a few emails saying, how dare they do this? You know, it's a service they promised would be there. And as with that, you know, continuing to provide backup, I mean, I think that is the most important functionality. But really, it's a kind of a sign of the end of the Obi strategy, which, you know, has come about It's not that long ago that it was all announced and it was the big push for Nokia to control and do everything themselves and do it through their own portal. And there's been a step back from that and the acknowledgement that really it needs to be partnering with others. And, you know, Google's one of those in terms of working with Gmail and, you know, contacts on Gmail as well. But then obviously Microsoft, most obviously, but also an openness to third-party services, you know, that's all still possible. And I think it's probably the right approach, simply because most people will have a lot of these services already, or that there are people that have better competency than Nokia to produce them and therefore take advantage of that. And Nokia focuses on what it does well. And I think the key for them is actually creating the smoothest possible experience so people can use the devices exactly how they like, rather than doing everything themselves in a walled garden. And there is a, you know, it's kind of that obvious strategy which called for a Nokia controlled ecosystem in totality is, you know, out of date. And I think it's not just Nokia that's about, it's all the platforms. You really need to have an ecosystem that is a rather than a walled garden, it's kind of a punctuated equilibrium, so that you can use the services that you choose. And the important thing is for companies like Nokia, who control the ecosystem, and regardless of whether there's a Symbian Series 40 or their partnership with Microsoft for Windows Phone, it's actually they need to make sure they support the kind of the services that are most popular as quickly as possible, and obviously keep any functional updates to those services accessible as quickly as possible. So I think Ovi Contacts going away is really symptomatic of this.
Anecdotally, I would just add in that I didn't personally use the services for reasons which I'll go into in a moment, but I know some people did. For example, we all have people coming to us for advice on phones, and quite a while ago there was someone who I actually ended up advising to get an E72, and she was very happy with it, and she wanted to share her contacts and calendar with her husband. So she gave her husband a username and password, and they were both collaborating on the Ovi calendar and contacts database. So there's one case of it being used, and I'm sure that's not an isolated incident. Myself, I didn't use it because there was a key feature missing from the web interface, is that there was no import or export. The only way you could get data in or out was to sync your phone with the service. And that wasn't always the best way of doing things, especially if you had to wipe your phone, for example. And I just didn't like the idea of it being a walled garden that you couldn't download your data via a browser in. So it always seemed like an incomplete service to me.
Yes, and just noting from the news that Nokia put out, what they're going to do is they're going to shut down the service in late January, but at that time there will then be an export data option. It's not there at the moment. We have just gone and checked that, but that means you'll be able to download it probably in something like a CSV format or some other export format, and you'll then be able to import it into Google Contacts, Live Hotmail, and various other services. We will keep an eye on that and let you know when that's all happening. But it's pretty much the same thing that happened with Ovi Calendar. They provided a way to export the data, and that's actually still available. And I imagine the same will apply to Ovi Contacts. So although it's, I think, unfortunate that Nokia choosing to sunset, I believe is the correct term in the Web 2.0 space, this particular service, at least they're going about it the right way. They're continuing to provide the backup service, which I think is probably the most valuable for most people. And they're going to provide a way for you to get your data out into another system, should you wish to do so.
Yeah, and of course we shouldn't be too unfair on Nokia here. Yes, the whole Ovi PIM in the cloud thing was a bit of a failure in the grand scheme of things. But then in addition to the Facebooks and Twitters of this world, which are grand successes, there are lots and lots of little startups and social networks and other attempts to do similar things, which have also failed in the grand scheme of things. So these things are not easy to get mass market traction. Now, just moving on, this is an article I read about a week ago on the site, and I'll just get the guys' views on this. I was pitching the Nokia C7, the Nokia N8, and yes, I know they're both year-old devices, but both have been updated heavily, but different firmware versions, right up to Symbian Anna and patches on Anna, and of course both are going to get Symbian Belle in the next month or so, allegedly. But I was pitching the Nokia C7 as kind of the female equivalent that and the Nokia N8 is the male equivalent, both have distinct pros and cons. I mean, people get fed up with Nokia producing all the best bits of different phones and different devices rather than all combining them into the one device. And I do sympathize with that, but there are certain physical characteristics which lend one to have pros rather than the other. For example, the big hump on the back of the N8 for its big camera. And the room for the bigger, large capacitor. The C7, despite being thinner, has actually got the removable battery, which I think is a real plus. And I just wish the N8 had had that. Just going around the panel, I mean, David, you had the C7 for ages, and you've got the N8 at the moment. Which of the two would you go for, and by what margin?
It would have to be by a clear margin, the N8, based on features. And I think actually I do prefer the physical design, and it's not because I think it's like a butch masculine phone. I think there's just something about the N8, and well, actually this is probably good feeding into my nerdiness, but I just think the N8 looks more futuristic, and I like that it's got the flat top and bottom, which because it means I can actually stand it up vertically without a desk stand.
It's rather precarious, though, isn't it? Isn't it knocked over the next time you nudge your desk or fling a ruler across the surface?
Well, it does, but it's Gorilla Glass, so that's one of the other great things about it.
But the C7 is Gorilla Glass as well. Rafe, I suspect you're more a C7 man. What are your reasons for going down the C7 route?
Well, I read this article and I was a bit insulted because Steve was basically calling me a big girl's blouse, because, yes, I prefer the C7. It's just a bit more... It's a bit more slimline. It fits in the pocket very nicely. It does everything that the N8 does, but doesn't have the camera. But when you trade off that camera, I think you get a sleeker and more attractive design. And I also think there's a number of features on the C7 that are kind of unique to it, or were at the time. They've since come onto some other devices. And I'll pick out a few things like the mute button, which is very handy. But more importantly, when you press mute when you're on a conference call, you actually want to be able to tell that you're on mute, so that when you then need to speak again, you can turn it off mute. And the C7 actually has a light that will flash on to indicate you're on that. So if you do a lot of conference calls, that's actually kind of a must-have feature. I also think that the responsive feedback on the device, and that's to do with the vibration motor that's inside, is better on the C7 than any other Symbian device, and there is a reason for that. There's a slightly different motor in there that actually has two types of vibration, so therefore the feedback you get from it when you're typing on particularly the T9 keyboard, but it does also apply on the QWERTY keyboard, is superior to other devices. And for me, the EDOF camera that comes with the C7 is perfectly sufficient for snapping anything I need to. I will say that if I'm going out deliberately now, I'm going to be photographing something interesting, I will still pick up the N8. And so, you know, the tendency to have two devices, I mean, I'm fortunate I have access to both of them. So I will choose one or other depending on what I'm doing. But I did find, you know, over a year of owning them, I actually picked up the C7 more often than I picked up the N8. So, yes, despite it making me a bit of a girl's blouse, I'm going to choose the C7.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I took the C7 to the Phone Show Chat Pub meet last week because I was trying to live with it for a few days, and I got on really, really well. I loved, for example, I mean, I love the curved styling. It really does fit beautifully in the hand. You're absolutely right. I actually quite like the oleophobic screen, the sort of grease-proof, fingerprint-proof layer. Yes, fingerprints still appear, but you can wipe them off far more easily than you can on the N8, and I really like that feel in the hand. I like the NFC, the fact that it was totally future-proof, and over 2012 it's going to become just as functional as all the other Bell handsets. So some really, really nice points. But the camera, of course, is the big one. And I know you say you take the N8 for special occasions and special photos. I find that wherever I go, I've got, you know, a young family and I've got relatives and it's Christmas, and it's just almost every single outing has some occasion where I need a really good camera with a really good flash, and the N8 just is indispensable in that regard. But
so you're just making it worse, Steve. You're just saying that, yeah. I've got no friends either. I'll also say about the C7 is the removable battery. I'm sure Steve was thinking this too, but I actually used it when I was at MWC, and I took a couple of batteries along, and it meant I had a phone that was absolutely guaranteed to last me throughout the time. And that combined actually with the E72, I think it was back then, or maybe it was the E6. I think it probably was the E6. I can't remember when that came out now. Oh, my memory's going. That's what makes the C7 really good for me. So I just think I'm more in touch with my feminine side than either Steve or David.
and I had no idea what Ewan would prefer out of the two. I suspect he's hadn't had much time with the C7, so maybe.
No, I think he likes to be different, so he'd go for the C601.
Yes, he does. He likes that. And to be fair, that does have a stunning screen and is a really nice form factor. Let's move on. Which accessory? This is a question posed by Rafe, so maybe this means he's hunting for Christmas present ideas. which accessory that's Symbian compatible will we most like to see under the Christmas tree on December the 25th? David, do you want to go first?
I think I would like the device which you reviewed recently, Steve, which is the Proporta 7000, because I mean, I'm dealing with a lot of phones lately that have diminishing battery life. It seems like the further we progress with devices, the less time they last for. And I like to have the phone on my bedside table so I can reach for it. So I don't really kind of get into charging overnight because I don't have a charging point where I sleep. So by the time I wake up, the phone's dead. So it would be nice if I could just have a little portable charger.
Okay, I'm going to pick the Nokia 360, Play 360, that's right, to give it its proper title, the MD50W Bluetooth Play 360 Surround Sound Portable Speaker. Phew, or just the 360 speakers. Now, Rafe, are these all NFC compatible, or is it just, is there a particular variant that's NFC compatible?
No, they all come with NFC, but obviously you need the phone compatible with them as well.
Yeah, and of course, if you buy two of them, which is the really nice, as I'm going for broke here with my Christmas presents under the virtual presents under the virtual tree, they look quite pricey actually. On Amazon, I'm seeing here they're around £100 each. That can't be right, Rafe, can it?
Yes, that is about right. There are some quite fancy electronics in them, and the speakers are actually specially designed to have a spreading effect that bounces off walls and things. So they are definitely in amongst the premium audio range, and I suspect also including Bluetooth and NFC probably adds, you know, 20 odd quid to the typical price of a speaker of this quality.
Yeah, but if you do get two of them, if you're lucky enough to have rich relatives, I guess, then you can, they automatically just detects the fact that there are two of them in the loop and you get full stereo effect and you can just basically fill your room with sound. So I guess that would be my choice. And I guess that would also mean I'd have to stick to the C7 because the N8 hasn't got NFC, so all the Bluetooth pairing would be a hassle. But hey-ho. On staying on the Christmas
theme, do I not get to choose an accessory, Steve? I mean...
Go on.
Aww.
I'm feeling really sad. Well, I'm sad because Steve's obviously been rootling around under my Christmas tree and stolen my Nokia 360 speaker, so I'm going to have to choose something else. But staying with a kind of Bluetooth NFC theme, I would really like to see the Nokia Essence Bluetooth headset. And this has actually just started selling in the Nokia flagship store, so my relatives have just enough time to pop over to Helsinki and go and pick one up for me. And this is kind of a very premium Bluetooth stereo headset, which has active noise cancellation. It comes with 99.8% of ambient noise being able to be cancelled out by the speakers. It's got microphones in the earbuds, which then sort of channel extra noise in cancelling things out. And Nokia say they're so good they'll actually cancel out the noise of blood beating in your eardrums. Now, can't say I noticed that on a usual occasion. But if you're going to get a pair of stereo Bluetooth headset, this is definitely the one to get. And it comes, I think, again, it's about the £100 price mark, and it comes with NFC. So again, just the ability to take your phone, tap it onto the headset, and have that all pair and start automatically. And one of the reasons I like this is because quite often when you're using some kind of Bluetooth accessory, and this applies to the 360 and also the music remote, which is another accessory I wouldn't mind seeing under the tree, it's useful to be able to temporarily stop the music or transfer it back again. And that's what's so good about these. And when I tried these out, when I actually saw the demo back when they were launched, you know, you touch your phone to it once, music starts playing, touch it again, music comes back to the phone.
Yeah.
And that's actually much more convenient than ordinary Bluetooth where you have to fiddle around with switching things off. So NFC, it's not just about the easy pairing. I think it's a much more natural operation to kind of touch something to a device and have it work, and it feels completely natural and intuitive. And I think it's one of those things that once it comes in, people will wonder how they did without it.
And it's an interesting point about the hearing the blood flow. I'm not sure if that's like fantastic engineering or fantastic marketing, because I had never noticed that either. But I use all the time, and even now for this podcast, I'm using in-ear Sennheiser's earbuds, and ever since I read and wrote about the Essence, it hearing blood flow, it's all I could hear when I put these in. So it's like, I feel like I really need the essence now to get rid of this dreaded like rumbling in my ears.
Well, I tend to listen to progressive rock where there's got whooshes and hisses and rumbles, and it's very difficult to tell the music from the blood flow, so I think I may not notice that. Staying on a Christmas theme, Rafe, you wanted to say something about Christmas shopping on your smartphone. Is that really possible? Well, surely it's better to use a big screen, isn't it?
Well, what prompted me to do this was I was actually out doing some Christmas shopping, and being a geek, of course, I was checking out the prices online to see if I was getting a good deal, and specifically with Amazon. And I checked onto Amazon and saw that it was a much better price than it was in the shop. And I thought, why am I stopping here? And I actually bought my Christmas shopping on Amazon. I'm actually one of the people who signed up to Amazon Prime, so it all comes with free delivery. So just a one-click delivery because I've signed into the account. And I'd done my Christmas shopping. And at that point, I kind of wondered why I'd even bothered going out shopping. And actually, the vast majority of it was done kind of online this year. But also bringing this to mind was there's a bit of controversy raging. It's in the States. Amazon have released, I think it's an iPhone app, whereby they're inviting people to scan barcodes, thus making the kind of the price comparison much easier, because I was obviously typing it in search manually. And they'll actually give people $5 off or 5% off to actually order it on Amazon rather than the shop. So I can imagine shopkeepers not being terribly impressed by this. I mean, I always feel slightly furtive doing that comparison when I'm in the shop anyway, because it's sort of I feel like I should be supporting the local shop. But making an explicit offer to actually reduce the price if you do this comparison is quite an interesting one. I can see why it's being controversial, but I suspect we'll only see more of this kind of thing come in. But,
I can picture loads of people wandering into like HMV and megastores and all with their smartphones, all scanning barcodes and then putting the item back on the shelf, frowning, and then all walking out again.
Exactly. You know, they become almost a showroom. And of course, if that does happen, the shops will disappear. Of course, I think actually there'll be a happy medium between the two. But it does make me wonder whether shops like this will maybe have to provide their own, equivalent apps where people can scan it themselves and see the special offers, or gets more competitive. And it's how do you sustain a sort of a retail bricks and mortar chain, because obviously the overheads in order to do something like that are higher than if you're just dispatching everything from a warehouse. But of course, people do like going to see things in person, and for some products it applies for more. But I did think it was interesting, without even sort of realizing I was doing it, I'd actually done Christmas shopping on a mobile device, which if you'd asked me a few years ago, I don't think I'd have realistically done. Certainly not on the kind of, and this was several things at once, and more than just buying the odd book or something. It was a significant part of the Christmas shopping, and done on the mobile device rather than on my laptop at home. So I thought it was just worth mentioning, as it's sort of changing trends, and sometimes these things happen without us even really noticing that we're doing them.
Yeah, I guess the only way the physical shops are going to survive is if they say, look, we have a price matching policy. You show us on your phone screen the price on Amazon and we will match that price. I mean, that's the only way they can survive, really. I mean, the shops themselves have the benefit. They can show you stuff you wouldn't normally come across online. Because online, you search for something and you find that thing. In the shops, you just browse the shelves. Oh, look, I haven't thought of that. And that's their big advantage. If they can price match as well, then of course they get the sale.
But that's true. I mean, the price matching thing's interesting because, as I said, the overheads are more expensive. So with profit margins rather thin, it becomes difficult to do. I think probably the thing that will end up winning it for the shops, as I say, is some people want to go and see these items, and so they will support the local shop. And Christmas shopping is an interesting one, because actually you don't mind if it arrives a few days later, because it's for someone else in a couple of weeks' time. Whereas a lot of the time when you're buying something for yourself, the immediacy effect is actually quite important. You want to be able to walk away with the item and then start using it. And particularly for things like books and music, I think that does apply, although I think all music now is going digital, and maybe the same about books. But there are lots of products that are physical items that you want to start using straight away, and so people do prefer the immediacy of shopping in the real world. And that's not pretend that most people aren't necessarily digital natives that are completely happy to do all their shopping online, although it is obviously something the shops need to think about, because the people who are happy and comfortable doing that kind of thing are only going to increase as the years roll on.
Yeah, we're running out of time on this special pre-Christmas podcast. It's a shame Ewan Spence wasn't able to join us, but he will be with our end of year show, hopefully. Any last words from you, David Gilson?
I just hope that everyone has a great Christmas and gets time to rest and relax and reset before the New Year starts and we start doing everything else all over again. So have a great Christmas and enjoy your New Year and be safe and talk to you soon.
And any last words from you, Mr. Blandford?
Well, I just want to give everyone a Christmas tip because one of my favourite applications is ViewRanger, and that's actually now available free in Ovi Store for a limited time as part of a kind of Christmas or a December promotion.
Ooh.
And that allows you to download all the survey maps in your country and wherever you are. The maps themselves will actually cost you money, but you do get open street mapping for free. So if you want a really good open street mapping client application, which gives you free maps, which are often more detailed than Nokia maps in some locations, it does depend where you are, obviously. I can thoroughly recommend it, and usually it's a couple of pounds to download the application. Now they're giving it away for free, so thoroughly recommended from me. And yes, I'd also like to wish everybody happy Christmas, although I do realize that many of our listeners are not going to be celebrating Christmas. I'm afraid we are, so we will be quiet on the website sort of between the December the 24th and the 26th, and I suspect that celebration will also roll a little bit into the next week, so please bear with us. But we will be updating things as usual and keeping plenty of content coming, and of course we welcome all your comments and feedback. As always, you can email me rafe@allaboutsymbian.com. but without further ado, yes, happy Christmas from me to all of those who are celebrating it this year.
Yes, and a goodbye from me as well. It seems strange to be wishing people happy Christmas and happy New Year on the 16th of December, but that's just the way the week scheduling has gone. So yes, have a very good festive and a relaxing holiday time if that's what you're into, and we will catch you again in 2012 on the podcast, if not before. And yes, look again for our end of year show, whether that happens at the last week of December or in the first week of January. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. In the meantime, yes, catch us all about Symbian.com and at AAS on Twitter. Goodbye for now.